Hello, this is Auntie Bee's Knees with your business report for the week of May 26th. This week, we take a look at governments and privatization in the global economy. Néstor Kirchner was inaugurated on Sunday as Argentina's sixth president in 18 months. Kirchner is the first elected president to take power since December 2001, when five leaders ruled over the course of 2 weeks as people took to the streets in protest of economic austerity measures imposed by the government in response to demands by the International Monetary Fund, or IMF. A center-left politician from Argentina's long-dominant Peronist party, Kirchner was sworn in as Argentina's 52nd president amid promises to defend domestic jobs and industry after more than a decade of unbridled free market policies. But he also faces challenges, restoring Argentina's ties to the international investment community and guiding his country out of its worst economic decline in history. Over the last 5 years, Argentina, a country that previously enjoyed the highest living standards in Latin America, has suffered through the worst economic decline in its history. A majority of people now live below the poverty line, and unemployment rests at 22%. Kirchner, from the sparsely populated Patagonian province of Santa Cruz, won his four-year presidential term by default after former President Carlos Menem dropped out of a runoff election. Menem decided to abandon the electoral race despite winning its initial round after opinion polls showed him losing by more than a 2-to-1 margin in a runoff contest against Kirchner. Menem was Argentina's president from 1991 to 1999, and although he left office before the country's economy collapsed, voters hold him largely responsible for the depression. A majority of voters in the first round of the election had voted for other candidates, including Kirchner, who rejected Menem's economic policies. Nonetheless, Kirchner comes to power after receiving only 16% of the popular vote in a preliminary election. Under Menem's leadership, Argentina had experimented with an extreme version of neoliberalism, fostering the indiscriminate opening of the country's markets to foreign capital and trade, launching the large-scale privatization of public companies and services, and implementing a currency system that fixed Argentina's peso to the U.S. dollar. Despite initial success in taming inflation and boosting economic growth, these policies made Argentina extremely vulnerable to external fluctuations in the global economy. Ripples created after the U.S. Federal Reserve started a series of interest rate hikes in 1994, followed by the Mexican peso crisis in 1995 and the Asian, Russian, and Brazilian financial crises in the later years of the 1990s, each sent shockwaves through the Argentine economy, which could not adjust so long as its currency was tied to the U.S. dollar and its economy was dependent on foreign investment. The result was a vicious spiral. Private capital flight by foreign investors led to increasing interest rates and a shrinking economy in Argentina, which led to more debt and even higher interest rates as investors feared currency devaluation and then debt default. The government finally did default on $95 billion worth of public debt at the end of 2000. 1 year later, the currency collapsed to one quarter its former value as banks from around the world pulled remaining investments out of the country and mass civil unrest accompanied worsening poverty. Despite the deepening crisis, the IMF continued to support Argentina's open market policies. Fund officials prolonged and worsened the depression by insisting on monetary and fiscal austerity measures at inappropriate times. All indications are that the IMF will now pressure Argentina's government to run large budget surpluses in order to make payments on its defaulted debts. This and other traditional IMF policy prescriptions could easily choke off the economy's nascent economic recovery. Since Argentina devalued its currency 1 year ago, the peso has risen more than 20% against the sinking U.S. dollar. As yet, Kirchner has been reluctant to meet with IMF officials, but Argentina's agreement with the International Money Lending Institution will expire in August, so negotiations will have to begin soon. Observers are unsure how Kirchner will respond to the pressures of the IMF and the international investment community. As a three-term governor of the sparsely populated Santa Cruz province, Kirchner's leadership skills are largely untested on the national and international stages. The new president certainly has a mandate to resist IMF demands and make economic recovery the country's first priority. But so far, his economic policy initiatives have been vague. To jumpstart the domestic economy and increase employment, Kirchner has promised a multi-billion-dollar public works program and a long-term rescheduling of the government's debt. Whether this plan will be accepted by international creditors is another question. Kirchner has already antagonized the American investment community by criticizing U.S. policies on free trade, the embargo on Cuba, and the war in Iraq. On the other hand, the devaluation of the Argentine peso, accompanied by apparent economic recovery and a booming tourism sector, has made Argentina a tempting haven for other foreign investors who are snapping up inexpensive property in the country. When and if the economy recovers, a great deal of property and industry could remain in foreign hands. Kirchner took his oath of office on Sunday before Congress in Buenos Aires. His wife, Senator Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, and their two children attended the inauguration ceremony alongside regional leaders including Cuba's Fidel Castro, Brazil's Lula da Silva, and Venezuela's Hugo Chavez. As many as 400 million workers representing both organized and unorganized labor in the public and private sectors participated in a national strike against the government of India's neoliberal economic policies last Wednesday. The strike was called by a coalition of India's most prominent trade unions, calling for a halt to the government's privatization schemes and plans to reform labor laws. The government's privatization projects aim to raise 132 billion rupees, or about $3 billion, by selling off state-run companies before March 2004. Proposed labor reforms being introduced at the same time include allowing state-run companies to dismiss workers and reducing deposit rates for pension funds. The government says that privatization is necessary to bridge India's increasing fiscal deficit and claims that labor reforms are needed to allow Indian industry to compete with countries such as China. The privatization and labor reform schemes are being promoted by the IMF and the World Bank as a way out of debt for India's government. Workers argue that the plans will lead to huge job losses and an end to job security in both the public and private sectors. The protest demands included halting the privatization of profit-making public sector businesses, cutting foreign direct investment in all service sectors, enacting comprehensive legislation to protect agricultural workers, maintaining the status quo on labor laws, and broadening social security. The strike affected banking, insurance, telecom, transportation, postal services, and mining operations across the country. Public services were particularly affected. Nationalized banks and post offices closed for the day. Work was also suspended in electricity and public health departments. Protesters organized rail and road blockades in various parts of the country while holding demonstrations and rallies. Calcutta was brought to a virtual standstill as protesters marched through the streets. The strike was described as the biggest show of discontent in recent times against the central government's economic policies. Germany's most powerful unions also staged a nationwide strike last week to protest the government's plans to trim unemployment benefits and loosen job protection. As many as 90,000 workers marched in 14 cities across the country Saturday to protest Chancellor Gerhard Schröder's proposed reforms. Agenda 2010, announced in March, is Schröder's response to a German economy on the verge of recession, with a rising budget deficit and unemployment close to 11%. As the German government's budget looks toward a 15 billion euro deficit in 2004, Schröder argues that costly social programs will have to be trimmed to ensure the long-term survival of Germany's welfare state. But there are other reasons for the dwindling reserves in Germany's federal coffers. Tax cuts introduced by Finance Minister Hans Eichels slashed government revenues from corporate taxes by 23 billion euros in 2000 to virtually nothing in 2001. Postmen, nurses, and bus drivers in Germany now pay more tax than Daimler Chrysler does on its profits. Agenda 2010 marks the most severe budget cuts to be introduced by a German government since the Second World War. Cuts to public welfare include shortening the period of payments for unemployment insurance and consolidating different forms of benefits, drastically cutting access to health insurance, transferring the costs of health care onto the shoulders of working people and the sick. Critics say the program, combined with recent tax cuts, represents a massive redistribution of wealth from the hands of working people to the profit margins of big business. But mobilizing labor against these initiatives has been slow, particularly among unions tied to the private sector. Many participants in last weekend's rallies expressed disillusionment with their unions, some of which have officially urged collaboration with the government on developing cuts to social services. And lastly, the United Nations' sell-off of the Kosovan Protectorate has begun as the UN publishes tenders for the controversial privatization of almost 500 formerly publicly owned companies in the region. Serbia, of which the Kosovan Protectorate is still legally a part, has opposed the privatizations. Kosovan trade unions have also opposed the sales. Kosovo became a UN protectorate in June of 1999 after an 11-week bombing campaign by NATO led to a Serbian withdrawal. According to the Kosovo Trust Agency, a UN body, the interim administration has introduced laws to, quote, ensure a very investor-friendly environment, including regulations on foreign investment, repatriation of capital, the purchase of real estate, and 99-year leases of land formerly used by socially owned enterprises, end quote. The UN claims that the sell-offs are vital for kickstarting Kosovo's economy, where about 2 million inhabitants depend mainly on foreign aid. But the head of Serbia's Coordinating Center for Kosovo has denounced the leases, claiming Belgrade was not consulted about their introduction. The Serbian government is particularly concerned about $1.4 billion in foreign debt it has guaranteed that is owed by the Kosovan companies. Despite being promised 20% of the privatization proceeds, unions representing workers at the companies have also opposed the sales. The Ombudsman for Kosovo and Independent Arbitrator for Human Rights Issues expects appeals against the privatizations to be filed. And that's a wrap for this week's Business Report. Signing off, this is Auntie Bee's Knees, reminding you to put your money where your mouth is and invest ethically.